I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers there reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
The young man makes up his mind to work. There's no limit to what he can do.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
Time again to talk our state's history.
Over there, over there. Send the word over there. That the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming. The drums rum coming everywhere. So prepare.
That rallying call written by George M. Cohan was heard all around the country and certainly here in Michigan. 100 years ago this week, the United States officially entered what was then called the Great War. Some 150,000 Michiganders served in World War I. And among them, Freeman McClintock of Lansing. His letters to his mother give us a picture of life in the Army during the Great War. With us now is our partner at the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, and we are pleased to welcome Freeman McClintock's daughter, Mary Jane McClintock Wilson. Welcome to both of you.
Good to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Mark, as the great European powers began fighting in 1914, it really wasn't very clear whether the United States would ever join the fight. Do we have any idea what the public mood in Michigan was when it came to the prospect of fighting in the trenches of Europe?
It was typical of the rest of the nation, really. This is a time when the U.S. would reelect Woodrow Wilson in 1916 under the slogan, "He kept us out of war." It's a time when the progressive movement is still fighting for suffrage. You have people concerned about lots of domestic issues, caring for the poor and mentally ill. Ford Motor Company is led by Henry Ford, who's a pacifist, but at the same time is working on mass production with the assembly line and is trying to get military contracts. And then also, he had several hundred people from Michigan go to Canada in 1914 to enlist and fight. You also have some xenophobia begin to creep in Michigan. Interestingly, Michigan was a really popular destination for German immigrants.
We know that the public mood in the United States certainly changed after the sinking of the Lusitania off the coast of Ireland, correct?
Yeah, so the Lusitania is usually marked as that seminal event. But for Michigan, again, 1916, Michigan was the lead state sending troops down to fight the Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa at the U.S.-Mexico border. And that really forced Michigan to think about better organizing their military units.
But we know ultimately Americans went to the trenches of Europe. Mary Jane, your father was one of them. Tell us a little about Freeman, your father, and his life before the war.
He was from St. John's. He was born with the automobile, and he always tinkered with motors and with the cars as they grew. And he went out west and worked with a Ford agency in Modesto, California. So he knew a lot about the automobile and how it worked.
Which I guess is why he wound up serving in the motor pool, didn't he?
That's right. He volunteered for the Motor Transport Corps. They were having a lot of trouble with the Ford ambulances being repaired overseas. Mechanics over in France didn't know how to repair the motors, but the Americans did, who had worked on them. So that's why they set up this Motor Transport Corps.
So this was right up his alley, and I understand he cared for the cars of some rather important people.
Well, eventually, because when he first went over, he worked in the field with the ambulance crews, repairing their ambulances. But eventually, after the armistice, then he went to work in Paris with the headquarters and was in charge of their park there. They called it park, P-A-R-C. And he worked with Pershing's car. Well, all the big people that were there for the peace talks, like Woodrow Wilson, Franklin D. Roosevelt, he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Herbert Hoover was there. Teddy Roosevelt, he had his car. He was in charge of the maintenance of their cars.
A perfect thing for a guy from Michigan who knows about cars and car engines. Mark, of the 150,000 or so Michiganders who served in World War I, how many were wounded or hurt?
15,000 wounded and 5,000 killed, and compare that to Michigan's role in the Civil War, where we had 91,000 volunteers, and we had 14,753 deaths, but 10,000 of those were from disease. So actually the 5,000 killed in action is sort of the same from the Civil War to World War I.
Mary Jane, when did you become aware of the letters that your father wrote to his mother?
My father, in his later years, was always talking about his life. In fact, he wanted to write his own autobiography, but he never really quite got around to it. But it was at the time when typewriters were in style. We didn't have computers, and so I used to type out what he would write. So I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't know the depth of his collection. So after he died, when I was trying to inventory everything, that's when I came across the letters from his mother. And he had never talked about those before. He talked about what he did during the war. He talked about different people and different problems that he'd had to solve. But he never talked about the letters he wrote home to his mother. For some reason, I don't know, but that revealed the story to me.
And what kinds of stories did he tell your grandmother as he wrote these letters?
Well, he never talked about the battlefield. I don't think he wanted to upset his mother. But he talked about the refugees. When he was first there, how he saw them going along the crowded roads with their all in carts that were drawn by their horses or donkeys or even a cow. He seemed to have a real feel for the devastation that they were experiencing. He talked about the devastation of the cathedrals. And then he talked about the joy at the armistice, too. Again, he talked about the refugees that were now returning to their homes. And right after the armistice, their corps went through some 15 or more German towns the day after the armistice, and the people there would look at them and say, "Are you English?" And they would say, "Well, we're Americans," and they would go wild. And he remarked about how the old men seemed to just bow their heads in gratitude. Children would scream with joy. But there wasn't the joy, he said, that there was in Paris. They celebrated. They just seemed to be happy and grateful to see the Americans.
And what did life have in store for your father, Freeman McClintock of Lansing? What did he do?
Well, he got into the automobile business. That's when he really came to Lansing, and he took on a Packard dealership. But he really liked the Cadillac. He was sold on the Cadillac that they used after the war over in Paris. He eventually got the Cadillac dealership and was involved with Cadillac for some 50 years.
You took his letters and went through them and shared them in your self-published book, In His Own Words. And I'm wondering, how did going through those letters and reading his communications with his mother, how did that change your view of who your father was?
Well, I always loved my father dearly. He was so patriotic. His country meant so much to him. And one thing we haven't talked about is the USAC, that's the United States Army Ambulance Corps. That association continued to live for many, many years afterwards. And he was a part of it. And he kept in contact with the comrades, with the people he'd worked with, his fellow ambulance men, as well as those that were above him. Bingham, who was his commander, went on to be a Harvard athletic coach for many years. And they would visit back and forth. There was a strong feeling of comradeship. And when Armistice Day came, they would always contact each other and celebrate. I didn't realize how devoted my father was to his country, but his letters revealed it to me.
Mark Harvey, when you think of that war that the United States entered 100 years ago this week, it was known as the War to End War. They really believed that, didn't they?
They did, but as you also know, the U.S. really held out as long as they could.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the Lusitania was sunk and we were fighting the border war with Mexico and then ultimately the Zimmerman telegraph that was intercepted and publicized, we just didn't have a choice. We joined in, and Europe lost a generation, and unfortunately it was just turned out to be the beginning.
That's true. And we should ask about the Zimmerman paper. What was the Zimmerman document about?
It really was the tipping point for the U.S. It was a coded telegram sent from the German foreign minister Zimmerman to the German minister in Mexico, von Eckart, saying basically Germany was going to break their promise and begin unlimited submarine warfare. He wanted von Eckart to tell the Mexican government that if they joined them, their spoils would be getting to reclaim parts of the U.S., The British intercepted it, and it was the first great coup in cryptology where they successfully decoded it. And it was held on for just a little bit before it was published in the U.S. just to get maximum effect. And it worked because we declared war.
I'm sure that historians like you, Mark, would encourage people to make sure they preserve things like these war letters that Mary Jane has from her father to his mother. There's something about these letters, isn't there?
Yeah, it's the personal story. You know, the Archives of Michigan collects both the official government record, but also the records of private citizens, which is what these are. And together they make a powerful narrative. You get to see the official side. You get to see the private side of monumental events. Often these are things that are stacked in an attic or in a box, and people have an awareness that they shouldn't just toss them, but they're unaware of what to do with them. And my response to that is, call us. And because as with Mary Jane, we see our role not just to save these types of materials, these letters, but to cultivate and share the story. And with Mary Jane's, I had a personal connection because my grandfather, who is from this Lansing area, he was a Cadillac man through and through, and he always bought his Cadillacs at, you guessed it, McClintock Cadillac.
Isn't that something? Mary Jane, have you donated then the letters to the Michigan History Center?
Oh, yes.
They're in safe hands.
And Mark has been a great help to me in putting things together. I'm very grateful to Archives of Michigan and what they've done for me, and I know that my father's collection, not only of his letters, but of all of his business records, about automobile business and so forth, they're all safely put with the state archives.
Mary Jane McClintock Wilson speaking with us today about her father, Freeman McClintock's letters that were written to his mother as he served in Europe during World War I, and Mark Harvey of the Michigan History Center. Thanks so much to both of you for sharing this wonderful story with us.
It's a privilege.
Thank you very much.